Welcome to this edition of Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane here with best-selling author and psychologist Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson. Dr. and Ryan, we're going to hear the second half of a conversation we started last Thursday. We had to bump part two until now to bring that great breaking news on the National Day of Prayer case last Friday. But the first half of this discussion was just fascinating with a gentleman who just personifies what we would call an adrenaline junkie. Ryan, you tend to run on adrenaline, I know. You probably related a lot to him.
I did, and I do tend to run on adrenaline. I just don't do it as well as I used to. But even in my heyday, I don't think I could have competed with Bob Hamer. I mean, his story made me anxious and nervous just sitting here, and it's happened years ago.
Mm-hmm. I was literally on the edge of my seat for that interview. We're talking about former FBI agent Mr. Bob Hamer. He joined us in the studio, and we had so much to talk about that we couldn't limit it to just one day. Mm-hmm. But Bob had other responsibilities, so we just continued right here in the studio to talk with him, and that's what we're going to hear today. Bob posed undercover as everything from a white-collar criminal to a drug dealer. And to a pedophile. He explained to us that while he was in a number of life-threatening situations over the course of his long career, his most difficult job was that of infiltrating the North American Man-Boy Love Association, also known as NAMBLA. And while he apparently wasn't in terrible physical danger, it was emotionally disturbing to him, and I understand why, having listened to him, because he had to meet with grown men who felt it was perfectly justifiable to abuse young children.
You know, Dad, hearing Bob talk about that experience was just awful to me as a parent, and I can understand why he found that assignment to be so heart-wrenching.
And, Doctor, while undoubtedly it's unpleasant to hear those kind of topics discussed, I know in my heart as a mom that I need to address these topics. Yeah. I cannot ignore the dangers, the predators, the evils that are lurking around my home and my children. I would encourage anyone who missed that conversation, parents especially, to go to myfamilytalk.com and catch part one of our interview with Mr. Bob Hamer.
Well, it's so important to do that in this day particularly, which is very different than 20 years ago Ryan, when you were a little boy.
I mean,
you'd take off on your bike and you'd be gone for 45 minutes. Today, I'm not sure I would be comfortable with you doing that, and you wouldn't with Lincoln,
That's
I'm
right.
sure. Well, after that conversation, we wanted to hear about some of Mr. Hamer's other assignments, as well as the effects that his position in the FBI had on his family. And so, as I said a minute ago, we just continued our conversation. It is unbelievable what this man has done. I mean, he must have ice water in his veins.
Yeah,
I just cannot believe he would put himself in that position. But thank God somebody will do that. His life really was like a high-action movie.
It certainly was. Again, go to myfamilytalk.com to catch that interchange with Mr. Bob Hamer. Without further ado today, let's return to the rest of our conversation as you, Doctor, asked him about yet another dangerous assignment.
Now, Bob, we began our conversation talking about your life as an undercover agent for the FBI, but actually you infiltrated different organizations as well. Explain that.
Yeah, when I was undercover in NAMBLA, I actually worked three undercover cases at the same time.
How just do you keep your sanity?
Just so your listeners understand, there are about 12,700 FBI agents, but in order to work undercover, you have to be certified. Now, you would probably agree I'm certifiable, but they really do certify you, and there's a selection process, and you're tested, and you go through a school. And some people that want to go into the undercover program aren't accepted. Some that go to the school don't get through the school. So there's only a limited number of people that are certified to work undercover. So literally toward the end of my career, I was getting all the IOU assignments. You know, if they needed somebody that was—
Do you have nerves of steel?
I'm an adrenaline junkie, and I just I just love it.
What was it like for your family?
Yeah, I've got to ask. You're married and you got two kids. That's what I'm thinking.
And you've got to keep all these different personalities straight and different cases straight. What was it like to come home? And that's got to be a lot of pressure.
You know what? My family was my tether to the real world. Mm. My wife is the sweetest Christian that you'd ever want to meet. We've been married for 37 years. Mm. She's been married to about 8 or 10 different personalities. So it's really, she's the one that's lucky because it's the same sweet girl I married 37 years ago.
Could they even know what you were doing?
You know what, Luann, that's a great question because I told them as much as I possibly could. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, I'm having lunch with Jimmy Bag of Donuts at the Pizza Emporium today. But I would say, look, I've got an undercover meeting tonight. I may be late or I may not be home for a couple days. We've got a drug deal going on in some other city or something like that. I wouldn't necessarily tell them specific names and targets, but I shared with them as much as I could because I wanted them to be a part of it. It's very difficult, and I think if there's an undercover agent out there listening, he understands this. You have to be so careful with what you share with anybody because if you say the wrong thing even to another FBI agent, they may think that, you know, you're cracking up or you're going to the other side and they go telling someone, you know, you better watch out for Hamer because he's having real second thoughts about this investigation. And there were few people that I felt with whom I could share, but with my family I could. My son, I shared more with him than I did with my wife because he just loved my undercover stories. And, you know, I actually shared with him probably a lot more than I ever should have. But
he's a captain in the Marines.
He's a captain in the Marine Corps now, but even when he was younger, he loved it. I mean, he hated when I worked gangs for 5 years in South Central Los Angeles, and he hated it when I switched assignments because I had a story almost every night after working.
Were you ever worried for their safety, though?
We had one incident that the L.A. Mafia had fronted me a kilo of cocaine, and back then cocaine was going for about $30,000 a kilo, and we were following the money. I would pay them $2,000 or $3,000 at a time, telling them that I was just ouncing out the cocaine, and then our surveillance teams would follow. If I pay the one person, they'd follow him to where he went to the next person, then they'd follow that person. So eventually we got probable cause to go up on wiretaps on many of the mob guys in L.A. Well, I owed the mob money. They had threatened to break my legs earlier in the week. They said that, you know, go ahead and kill me if I don't bring more money. We had the wiretap up. The guys in the wire room called me and said, hey, they're mad at you. You better take more money. That weekend, I was in Kmart. Now, FBI agents, you know, they can afford Kmart, and that's about it. But Tony Soprano doesn't shop at Kmart. Well, here's the guy that threatened to break my legs walk into Kmart. And I saw him before he saw me, and I grabbed my little girl, and she was only 5 or 6 at the time. And she's now, I won't tell her age, but she's a mother of 3 and married to a minister. We rushed out the back of Kmart through the warehouse section. And for several years, she never quite understood, but she was telling everyone at school how special she was because her dad could take her to that part of Kmart where ordinary shoppers couldn't go. So that was, in terms of my family, that was as close as we came to kind of a dangerous situation.
Were you in situations repeatedly where if the person you were targeting knew you were an agent, you would have been killed?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, oftentimes. I tell the story. I actually had $500,000 in a briefcase. I was sitting in the Los Angeles Hilton Hotel at LAX, right there near the airport. I was sitting with an international heroin dealer. We were waiting for 2 kilos of heroin to arrive. Now, we had already seized heroin in Frankfurt, Montreal, Thailand, and Toronto, Canada. He said to me, my partner is in the room, in the lobby. If anything goes wrong, you're the first person he's going to kill. Just then, Dr. Dobson, 2 people that I knew a decade earlier from Cincinnati, Ohio, walked into the lobby of the hotel. Now, if I wrote this in a book, you wouldn't believe it. If you saw it on a movie, you wouldn't believe it. And these were people that went to the church that I attended in Cincinnati, Ohio. I lived with them for a semester before I got married. They were the sweetest, nicest, most vivacious people you'd ever want to know. I kind of leaned back and shook my head, and fortunately, Pat, the wife, knew that this wasn't the time for grips and grins. She grabbed her husband and kind of went the other way. I was wearing a body recorder. I had a microphone taped to my chest, and afterward, we listened to the tapes, and you could actually hear my heart starting to beat, and it was thumping. And she said, when she was flying in to Los Angeles, she prayed to God, and she said, God, I know Bob does very dangerous things. I don't know what he's doing today, but I hope you'll just keep an eye out for him. And it's because I was on her mind and on her heart and that she was able to at least understand it.
Did she see it in your eyes?
Oh, yeah.
How did she know?
Yeah, she knew.
Maybe she heard your heartbeat.
Yeah. She knew. And about probably 10 or 15 minutes later, the heroin showed up and the FBI jumped in and we arrested three international heroin traffickers. And later that evening, my wife and I had dinner with Pat and Don, and we laughed about the story.
How did you protect yourself from those who would remember that you played that role and come try to find you?
You know, now that I have a book out, I'm figuring if I get whacked at a book signing, it's going to shoot this to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. So my wife can say, you know, my first husband was a New York Times bestselling author, just like Dr. Dobson.
So. Oh, my goodness, Bob. This has been fascinating to me. I didn't get the answer to the question that I asked you about yet another sting operation or undercover responsibility that you had, but it had to do with something called Smoking Dragons?
Operation Smoking Dragon was an undercover case that we took on right after 9/11. The FBI was concerned, rightfully so, with port security and also with the idea that counterfeit cigarettes were coming into the United States, and these counterfeit cigarettes were filtering down to mom-and-pop grocery stores, some of whom were owned by Muslims, and some were using the profits from these counterfeit cigarettes to support terrorism overseas, such as Hamas and Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. I was part of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, so we began taking a hard look sort of at the snake from both ends. We looked at the head of the snake, these people that were bringing in the cigarettes, and then we had other agents that were looking at these mom-and-pop grocery stores that were selling the counterfeit cigarettes. So I was the undercover agent at the head of the snake, and I started dealing with who we believe to be the top importer of counterfeit cigarettes, at least on the West Coast. It blossomed from one person to I met with Russian organized crime members who were selling me stolen cars off the ports of Newark. I started dealing with some Iraqis. I was dealing with multiple criminal syndicates, Chinese organized criminal syndicates. What started as counterfeit cigarettes eventually evolved into a $60 million surface air missile deal with the Chinese. I eventually purchased $2 million of the Supernote. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but North Korea actually counterfeits our $100 bills, and they are near perfect. One of the guys that we convicted laundered close to $1 million through the slot machines in Las Vegas. The quality of the Supernote is that good, and it's actually an act of war to counterfeit another nation's currency. As a result of this undercover case, Operation Smoking Dragon, a case nobody really ever heard about, President Bush, on January 26, 2006, in a press conference, announced that we finally have evidence that North Korea is counterfeiting our $100 bill, and essentially North Korea knock it off. You know, it's an act of war for what you're doing.
That's it?
Yeah.
Knock it off? That's almost a little childish, isn't it?
Well, if Vanity Fair had an extensive article about it, and it was really sort of based upon this case, according to Vanity Fair, and I will take it as gospel, that it's what brought North Korea back to the six-party talks.
Are you just particularly cool under fire?
No.
I can't imagine looking at somebody who's armed and has the capacity to shoot you and the desire to if he knew what you were up to and staying cool.
You know what? General Boykin and I talked about this once. I was more fearful of embarrassment than death. I figured if I died, I knew where I was going, but I just didn't want to be a YouTube in perpetuity because of something stupid that I did or said, because all my undercover meetings were on videotape or audio tape. And so I could usually stay fairly cool.
How do you leave a life like that? You are an adrenaline junkie. You enjoyed it greatly. And to leave that and to try to live what would some call a normal life, is it tough?
It was extremely difficult. I retired in January of 2006, and it was tough for the first couple years. I've written three books. I've written a couple shows for TV. I've been a tech advisor for TV. But it's certainly the thrill of pounding a keyboard is not like it is mm-hmm. going face to face with the bad guys and convincing them that you're someone that you're not. That adrenaline, that rush of adrenaline is kind of tough to replicate.
I have one of your books in my hand. It's called Targets Down, which is a novel. Did you imply just now that you've written a book about your experiences?
Yeah, my first book is called The Last Undercover, and it chronicles my NAMBLA investigation, that three-year investigation. Frankly, we couldn't find a publisher that would write an entire book on NAMBLA, so I threw in a dozen other undercover cases, some of which I talked about today. So that first book, The Last Undercover, is of my true undercover experiences. My first novel, which came out in March of this year, was called Enemies Among Us. And it's a story of an FBI agent who's struggling with his faith that goes undercover in a charity that's been infiltrated by terrorists. And then Targets Down is the second in this series. Ollie North is my publisher. He says it's faction rather than fiction because it's a lot of what I did. My protagonist is Matt Hogan. He's better looking and has more hair and is a little younger than I am.
Do you put your picture on these books?
My picture's in the in The Last Undercover. I have pictures of the book.
Aren't you begging for trouble? I mean, goodness gracious.
You know, Ryan, this is just to try to amp up that that adrenaline.
Do you think you'll ever do that again?
Yeah, I would if they called me. Still trying to get back in the Marine Corps. So if the Commandant is listening, sir, sign off on the waivers.
You're serious about that?
Oh, I'm very serious.
May I ask your age?
61.
How do you get in the Marine Corps at 61?
That's why they won't let me back in.
Oh, my goodness, Bob. This has been fascinating.
Unbelievable.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Dobson. It's been an honor.
Okay, let's promote your books again.
Oh, yeah.
One of them's Targets Down. Yeah. This is new.
Yeah, Targets Down releases June 1st.
Okay. And your older books that are still available.
Right. Yeah, the first book that I wrote was called The Last Undercover. It came out in 2008. It's probably still available in bookstores, but it's available online through Amazon or any of the online merchants. My debut novel, Enemies Among Us, debuted in March of 2010. Available at mainline bookstores. The second in the series of this novel is called Targets Down, releases in June of 2011.
Hmm. Well, if you get into the Marine Corps, you give me a call, will you?
Can I come back on if I get in?
Sure. God bless you, friend.
Thank you so much.
Well, listening to FBI agent Bob Hamer on these past two Family Talk broadcasts, Ryan, it really gives you a renewed appreciation for all those men and women who put their lives on the line just to protect us every day.
It does, Luann. I was struck at how much evil would have and would continue to be perpetrated if it weren't for people like Bob Hamer. And not just Bob, but all of the military and police, firefighters, security officers, so many people out there putting their lives at risk for us. And I know our listeners are going to want to hear more about Bob, and we'll have links to that at myfamilytalk.com.
And Ryan, this is especially a good time for us to just restate our appreciation to all the families, all of the family members. I think of the spouses out there whose husbands go off to work in a rather dangerous job as maybe a cop or a firefighter, as you said, something like that.
Military.
And we just, again, want to say thank you for the sacrifice your whole family makes on behalf of our safety. And this reminder that if there's any way our ministry here at Family Talk could reach out to you, if you need prayer, you need someone to stand with you, give us a call. We would love to link arms with you. Our number, 877-732-6825.
You know, Luann and Ryan, we're coming up on the first anniversary of our initial broadcast, which occurred on May 3rd of last year. Can you believe it's been a year? I mean, it's gone by like the snap of your fingers, and I think it's
because... It feels like 10 years to me. I got to be honest.
You've aged 10 years,
I feel like it.
Ryan, the Lord is really working on you, and I love what you're doing here.
Thank you.
Both of you make a great contribution to this ministry. And, you know, a year ago when I was thinking about putting a team together, I could not have done a better job than I did by asking the two of you to join us. And I think many of our listeners are enjoying it, too, from the feedback that we get. Speaking of feedback, I was thinking of how much fun it would be and how meaningful it would be for us to open the phone lines a week or two prior to May the 3rd, our first anniversary, and call and just tell us what you want to say. If you've enjoyed the broadcast, if there are certain programs that have meant a lot to you, or if there's anything you want to say to us that we should hear, we're going to record those comments and then choose some of them and let our other listeners hear what you have to say. You think that's a good idea?
That's a great idea. In fact, Doctor, to do so, listeners can simply call our main Family Talk phone number here, 877-732-6825. One more time, 877-732-6825. When you call, you'll be transferred to a special line set up just to record your message. Again, we would love to hear which Family Talk broadcasts have impacted you the most since we began last May. Give us an example. Tell us a short story about how one of these programs has impacted your family, maybe even strengthened your walk with the Lord. And if you need a little refresher on what some of these past year's broadcasts have been, go to myfamilytalk.com, look on the broadcast page, and if you scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll be able to check out everything that we've aired in this past year. Again, that's all at the broadcast page of myfamilytalk.com.
You know, speaking of the fact that we're promoting something that's going to occur in several weeks, I probably ought to mention again that we told our listeners just a while ago that we're not sure that we're going to survive financially because we've been in quite a hole. I mean, February and March were just rock bottom, and January wasn't all that great either, and it requires about $500,000 to pay for this broadcast per month. And on those 2 months, we received about 25% of what we need. And Ryan, you made a statement that really touched my heart where you talked about the fact that our purpose here is to provide first aid for the soul. That's what we're trying to do. And we ask our friends to help us out if they could. And so when we say what's going to happen on May the 3rd, I hope it is. You know?
Well, something exciting has happened because a friend of Family Talk did hear our need and has offered a matching fund to help get us through this crisis. But really, what will sustain us for the long haul is for people to donate on a monthly basis. And you can do so by calling us or going online. Our number is 877-732-6825. And as always, our website is myfamilytalk.com.
And he offered $500,000 as a matching grant for
that
purpose.
That's right.
And that was an answer to prayer. So maybe we will be here on May the 3rd.
We'd love it. In fact, Doctor, a Family Talk listeners should be checking their mailboxes in the next few days for a letter from our board of directors, which really further outlines this whole opportunity. If you're not already on our mailing list, you can sign up online at myfamilytalk.com or give us a call, 877-732-6825. That's the same phone number I gave earlier at which you can record your comments or your stories of how a Family Talk broadcast has impacted you in this past year.
Thanks for joining us, and be with us next time on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.